Good morning. This is Dallas Townsend with the CBS World News Roundup. The Chinese invasion of Vietnam may have ended just 3 days after it began. Peter Collins reports from Bangkok, Thailand.
The latest broadcast from Hanoi and intelligence sources here in Bangkok tend to confirm reports from Peking that the Chinese attack is over. The Peking report says the Chinese are pulling back and that they consider their operation a success. Radio Hanoi indicates the fighting has tapered off in the last day, and sources say the Chinese have been holding in place no farther than they were the first day, some 6 miles into Vietnam. Hanoi says its troops killed some 1,500 Chinese yesterday, but that's down from the total of 3,500 they claim to have killed in the first 2 days of fighting. Sources here say the Vietnamese held back their best regular army units from the border throughout the fighting, apparently trying to avoid being dragged into a battle with the Chinese that they might lose. So it now appears the Chinese are pulling back their 100,000 men who were inside Vietnam before the Soviet Union would feel compelled to come to the aid of Hanoi and possibly set off a larger conflict. Peter Collins, CBS News, Bangkok.
Japanese correspondents reporting from Peking say China miscalculated the deployment of Vietnamese military strength, and as a result, the invading Chinese did not fight any Vietnamese regular army troops. Bruce Dunning has details.
According to the reports, the Chinese had expected to find Vietnamese regular units close to the border, when in fact they were not. Most of the fighting, therefore, has reportedly been with Vietnamese border guard and militia units, the report said. The Japanese, quoting anonymous sources in the Chinese capital, said one major aim of the invasion was to inflict heavy damage on Vietnam's regular forces. The reports also say the Chinese government had expected international criticism for the invasion, but felt it was worth the risk in order to inflict what the government considers due punishment on the Vietnamese. Bruce Dunning, CBS News, Tokyo.
That punishment, of course, to be inflicted on the Vietnamese for their invasion of Cambodia. Soviet Foreign Minister Andrei Gromyko has restated the Kremlin's warning to China to halt its aggression against Vietnam. In the text of a speech published today in Pravda, Gromyko says his government's position on this matter was clearly put forth in the statement it issued day before yesterday. The Chinese, he says, must stop their move into Vietnam before it's too late. Now, if the latest reports are correct, the Chinese have indeed stopped their move into Vietnam. Gromyko also repeats a previous Kremlin warning against any outside interference in Iran. Such interference, Gromyko declares, would be considered as affecting Soviet national security. President Carter is on his way to Georgia this morning to deliver a major address on foreign policy. We'll hear about it from Leslie Stahl.
Originally, the speech was intended as an answer to critics of the president's yet-to-be-consummated SALT treaty. But the speech has been expanded. Now it's an answer to critics of the president's overall foreign policy. One official said the president will make a strong statement that the U.S. will stand by its allies. Another official said the president will explain the administration's so-called hands-off policy in Iran and Southeast Asia. According to officials, when the president was flying home from Mexico, he decided to change his prepared remarks to include long statements on the situations in Iran and on the Vietnam-China conflict, and to clarify U.S. policy in those areas. The speech will be delivered at Georgia Tech, where Mr. Carter will get an honorary degree in engineering. He'll also attend a ceremony at the State House, the unveiling of his official portrait as governor of Georgia. Leslie Stahl, CBS News, the White House.
The foreign policy address will be broadcast over many of the CBS radio network stations at 12:30 p.m. Eastern Time. While he's at the State House, Mr. Carter will address the Georgia legislature, and in the advanced text of that appearance, the president puts up a strong defense of his proposed new budget. He is determined, he says, to resist pressure to increase the budget for what he calls someone's pet project. Mr. Carter says the nation must continue to meet the needs of the poor and the elderly, but he adds there is a clear limit on the ability of the American people to pay higher and higher taxes to finance new programs. Ayatollah Khomeini's Revolutionary Committee in Iran today announced the executions of four more ranking officers in the Shah's old imperial army. The story from Doug Tunnell.
Committee spokesmen say the three generals and one brigadier general were executed by firing squad in Tehran before dawn this morning. Four others, including the former head of Savak, the Shah's secret police, were executed after trial by revolutionary court last week. Iran's new government is believed to be holding at least 24 other military men and civilian administrators on charges of torture, treason, and corruption under the Shah's regime. The executions are part of a purge aimed at rebuilding Iran's shattered military establishment. The Ayatollah yesterday issued yet another appeal for servicemen to return to their bases and cooperate with their officers in getting the armed forces reorganized. So far, however, Khomeini's appeals to the troops have met with only partial success in Tehran's garrisons. Doug Tinnell, CBS News, Tehran.
A bizarre sideline on the Iranian Revolution has been disclosed by the Texas millionaire H. Ross Perot, a carefully coordinated, melodramatic rescue of two colleagues from an Iranian prison. Eric Engberg reports from Dallas.
Perot says he organized his own rescue mission after becoming convinced the U.S. government could not help his two employees who had been jailed in late December. He turned to an old friend, retired Army Colonel Arthur Bull Simon, who had led an assault team into North Vietnam in 1970 in a vain effort to rescue American POWs. A dozen combat veterans from Perot's computer company joined Simon on the mission to Tehran. They say they contacted leaders of revolutionary factions and paid them in smuggled U.S. currency to storm the prison where the two Americans were kept. It worked. The two were among the 11,000 who escaped during the disturbance at the prison, and Perot's rescue team was able to sneak them into Turkey. Had there been trouble, Perot says, his alternate plan called for the use of a helicopter and airplanes, including a chartered 707, to spirit the team out of Iran. All of this was done, Perot says, without the knowledge of the U.S. government, at a cost he has not yet determined, but which probably will run into the millions of dollars. Eric Engberg, CBS News, Dallas.
For obvious reasons, Perot adds, he's not going into details of how the rescued men made their way to Turkey. They're identified as William Gaylord and Paul Chaperone, both employed by Perot's Electronic Data Systems Incorporated. When a policeman stops a law-abiding citizen and asks him to identify himself, can it be a crime for the citizen to refuse? Fred Graham reports that that question, as old as the Constitution, comes before the Supreme Court tomorrow for the first time.
Civil liberties lawyers assert that Americans have a constitutional right to be left alone by the police unless there is some reason to suspect the individuals of a crime. Law enforcement officials point out that the Supreme Court has upheld the authority of the police to stop and frisk dangerous-looking people, and now the court is being asked to uphold the power of the police to require citizens in suspicious circumstances to identify themselves or face arrest. The justices will hear arguments in cases from Detroit and Texas, which have recently enacted laws making it a crime for people to refuse to properly identify themselves to the police. The court will probably decide the case by June, and if the police are upheld, other cities and states would be expected to pass laws requiring citizens to identify themselves when demanded by the police. Fred Graham, CBS News, Washington.
The head of the country's largest labor organization today appears close to an open break with President Carter. Ike Siemens has the story in Bal Harbour, Florida.
AFL-CIO President George Meany has consistently differed with several presidents over their economic policies, especially when they affect his members. When President Carter took office, Meany indicated he was happy with them. But now, he has stepped up his criticism of the president, ranging from what he charges is a weak foreign policy to economic moves that favor business more than workers. At the midwinter meeting of the AFL-CIO Executive Council in Bal Harbour, Florida, the 84-year-old labor chief said he can see no improvement in Mr. Carter's leadership ability. When asked who he would like to see as president, Meany replied,
"Yeah, Harry Truman. I wish he was here."
But humor aside, it's clear that President Carter will have no easy task trying to convince George Meany and other labor leaders that his economic policies are best for the country. Ike Siemens for CBS News, Bal Harbour, Florida.
The effects of yesterday's dreadful weather in the Northeast will be felt for a long time, especially among other places in Baltimore, where more than 300 persons were arrested on charges of looting after the city's worst snowstorm ever. 20 inches of snow fell on Baltimore. Some looting was also reported in Prince George's County outside Washington.
This is The World Tonight. Good evening. I'm Douglas Edwards, CBS News. President Carter warned the Soviet Union today not to meddle in Iran and Vietnam and told the Kremlin that another SALT treaty to limit nuclear arms is more important than ever. The warning and the olive branch came together in a speech at Georgia Tech as an honorary engineering degree was awarded to President Carter. Robert Pierpoint has more.
Perhaps unconsciously, the president set the theme for his address when he added a line that was not in the prepared text, declaring, "As president of the United States, I am determined to keep our nation at peace." Mr. Carter then went on to discuss Iran and Southeast Asia in terms of that theme. Somewhat defensively, President Carter said that the United States cannot control events within other nations, noting that the current revolution in Iran is the product of deep social, political, religious, and historic factors.
Those who argue that the United States should or could intervene directly to thwart these events are wrong about the realities of Iran.
Speaking of Vietnam's invasion of Cambodia and China's invasion of Vietnam, the president again stressed his desire for peace.
We will not get involved in conflict between Asian communist nations. Our national interests are not directly threatened, although we are concerned, of course, at the wider implications of what might happen in the future and what has been happening in the past.
Mr. Carter urged restraint on all parties, but added that we are fully prepared to protect our vital interests wherever they may be challenged. He gave no hint where that might be. Robert Pierpoint, CBS News, Atlanta.
There was an ominous sound to Soviet commentary today. Two of the most important commentators said that China cannot go unpunished, that the time for acting like warlords is past. More news after this.
We could have done it easier by cranking copiers out, but shots and innovators, so we took another route. Get the thing that makes a you and makes a me a me. Make copying easier, better with originality. Cause original ideas make better copies, sharp. Original ideas make better copies.
And there's no better example of sharp originality than the new SF-810 Any Paper Copier. It delivers 22 copies per minute, with push-button convenience to interrupt long runs for single copies, and automatically change paper from invoice size up to giant 11 by 17s. And Sharp's 810 copies everything, including photos, with detail that's as close to a camera as a copier can get.
For pioneers are we, and technology is the key.
For a demonstration, call 800-447-4700. In Illinois, 800-322-4400.
There's been a lot of confusion today about whether the Chinese are pulling out of Vietnam now, and apparently the answer is no, not yet. The Chinese news agency says China is still hitting back, which is just about all that China has ever told its people about the invasion. Peter Collins has a report from his listening post in Thailand.
The key to the welter of confusing reports from Peking may be the difficulties the Chinese military could be facing in withdrawing from Vietnam. Intelligence sources here in Bangkok report at least four reinforced divisions plus other units went across the border, perhaps 100,000 men altogether. In 4 days of fighting, these forces have never gone farther than 6 miles into Vietnam. Because they have remained in place, Vietnamese militia units have been able to counterattack, and both sides have suffered heavy casualties. Radio Hanoi says a total of 5,000 Chinese have been killed, but its latest reports indicate fighting tapered off yesterday. Vietnamese losses have not been mentioned. CBS News has learned that even before today's first report from Peking of a withdrawal, official but private Chinese communications were talking about a pullback. Informed speculation here is that because of possible problems in withdrawing, the Chinese military regarded the first seemingly authorized report as premature, and so a denial was issued. The confusion may have delayed a withdrawal, but intelligence sources believe that if the Chinese are not already pulling back, they may be preparing to do so. Peter Collins, CBS News, Bangkok.
Ayatollah Khomeini's revolutionaries took four more of the Shah's generals to the rooftop at 2 a.m. today and shot them dead. That makes eight of them now, and it's only started. Richard Wagner has more on the Ayatollah's hopes and fears.
Although suffering from fatigue and ordered by his doctors to rest for 3 days, the Ayatollah Khomeini has issued a stern warning to disruptive elements at work in Iran. Khomeini said bandits and lawbreakers are taking advantage of the unsettled situation here to pursue their own unlawful objectives. The Ayatollah said any such activity which challenges his provisional government will be regarded as an uprising against the Islamic Revolution. He said unlawful elements will be crushed with the same force used to depose the Shah. Meanwhile, the situation in Iran continues to return slowly to normal. Many schools around the country reopened today, although classes at Tehran University did not resume. And the National Iranian Oil Company has announced it will be ready to resume full production in about 10 days. Richard Wagner, CBS News, Tehran.
More news when the World Tonight continues. Now True Value Hardware Stores can help you add to your home workshop with quality cutting tools at very sharp prices. Hi, Pat Summerall to tell you they offer dependable name brand hand tools like the Master Mechanic 26-inch 8-point hand saw for just $347. This Master Mechanic saw features a hardened and tempered steel blade that's bevel filed and set for cleaner and easier cuts. Another sharp buy from True Value Hardware Stores is the Stanley Surform Shaver for just $1.77. It's more versatile than other types of planes because it can cut and shave rough wood, plastic, and metal and do it faster and easier. And it's compact and flexible enough for shaving and finishing around tight corners and in those hard-to-reach spots. Get these and other quality name brand tools at participating True Value Hardware Stores and Home Center.
True Value Hardware, it's more than just a name. It's our way of doing business at these
New York City and Washington, D.C., and points north and south started digging out today from the worst snowstorm in years, and what that meant in Baltimore was plowing the streets so that police could deal with snowstorm looting. Susan Spencer has that story.
Shop owners in Baltimore's West Side were trying to clean up today and salvage whatever the looters left them. Officials said more than 1,300 incidents of looting were reported, 300 people were arrested, and witnesses said that many of the criminals were kids, only 7 or 8 years old. They guessed, and quite rightly, that police would not be able to get through Baltimore's snowy streets to catch them. Bill Silverman's furniture store had not a stick of furniture in it this morning.
I understand there was a line of people going four ways, northeast, south, and west, with lines of furniture going up and down the street. What they took out of the store they didn't like, they broke and they threw away. I understand there's washing machines lying around that belong to me. I just haven't got transportation to get to them right now.
Police are now on round-the-clock duty. They have doubled the usual patrol. The National Guard is helping with four-wheel drive vehicles and trucks. The mayor has imposed a curfew tonight, but then a curfew also was on yesterday. Susan Spencer, CBS News, Baltimore.
Wall Street in a moment.
How do whites really feel about blacks, about integration, about busing, about equal opportunity? This week, Newsweek magazine reveals a surprising Harris Poll study on how whites and blacks feel about racial equality. On the business scene, Newsweek explores the pension system mess and reports on the newest wrinkle in luxury cars, old-time classics with modern Detroit engines. Newsweek's cover story is a 15-page special report probing the apparent helplessness of America in a world of woes. Newsweek. Don't go another week without it.
Stocks higher today. The Dow Jones Industrial Average closed around 835, up 7.54. Volume on the New York Exchange, 22 million shares. Wall Street on this World Tonight.